Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today.
You said last time that the first brand that made an impact on you was Quaker Oats. Do you still hold to that answer?
I do. As I shared, my dad worked at Quaker Oats. And I think about it even more than I did when you, I think you were the first person to ask me that question. Part of what inspired me with Quaker Oats was the thing that you referenced that you do at P&G, the launching of new products. My dad worked there. We always had new products that we were testing, that we were sampling, that he was talking about. So yes, Quaker Oats is still near and dear to my heart, along with many other brands that inspire me today.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. Hey, it's tax season, and my guest today in the CMO podcast is none other than Jill Kress, the Chief Marketing and Experience Officer at H&R Block, the Kansas City-based company that has been helping people with their taxes since 1955. Here's trivia. H&R Block is one of the most ubiquitous storefronts in America, with thousands of offices, almost as many locations as McDonald's. Yes, H&R Block has a big business in tax prep, revenues approaching $4 billion, but their ambition is changing to something larger, anchored in their purpose to provide help and inspire confidence in their clients and in their communities. We'll talk today about reframing a 70-year-old brand, its challenges, its opportunities, and what H&R Block is learning along the way, especially about marketing taxes to Gen Z. Jill was a guest on our show way back in January 2020 when she was transitioning from her role as CMO at National Geographic to VP of Marketing at PayPal. Jill left PayPal about 2 years ago to become the Chief Marketing and Experience Officer at H&R Block. Here's my chat about creativity, building a brand with Gen Z, and a heck of a lot more. Here's Jill Kress. Jill, welcome back to the CMO podcast. You were last on the show in January 2020, weeks before the COVID pandemic hit, and you were just starting up a new job in the early days at PayPal. So I want to start this recording 4 years later. What's your most vivid memory for yourself back in that time of transition for you and your career, and obviously transition for us as a world, as a society? What's your most vivid memory of that time, other than our podcast?
What a moment that was, for sure. And I was so energized, optimistic, enthusiastic about what was ahead. I had been a fan and a big user of the PayPal and Venmo platforms, and I just thought so much was possible. And there was, but certainly COVID was a massive bump in the road. I was actually doing a global tour. I had been in Europe for 3 weeks meeting the marketing and product teams when COVID hit that March. And we were in Berlin, and I said to some colleagues, I think we have to get back to the States. So it was just a really an interesting juxtaposition of intense optimism with the reality of this drastically changing environment that we were all trying to navigate. And so how do you balance ambition, optimism, a growth mindset with the challenges that we were facing?
Yeah. So you got back to the US on a flight out of Berlin?
I hopped a flight to London and was in London with lots of other people trying to get to and fro. And then of course we all thought, well, we're going to buckle in for 2 weeks. I did go back to the PayPal offices in New York City. And, you know, we were just feeling it out. And then it was interesting for someone like me who for many years would tell people when they asked where I lived, that I lived in the world and I loved living in the world, to really live in my home and to have to find energy through mediums like this. And in a way it was really lovely because, you know, we connected with old friends on a more regular basis through FaceTime and things like that. But anyway, yeah, it was a very interesting time for sure.
Yeah. I re-listened to our show from 4 years ago, and I do need to follow up on a few things from the show. And the first one is, you were at that time very much looking forward to the new season. It was season 3, I think, of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, yes.
Yes, we're going back. So did you finish the series? I suspect you did. And I want to know why that series resonates with you so much, because you talked about it a lot last time we had our chat.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think I recently was nominated for a Matrix Award. We'll be celebrating that later in May. And the theme this year is rule breakers. And I think one of the things that so resonated with me about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and the amazing performance by Rachel Brosnahan was just how she embodied what it meant to be a confident person and woman who broke the rules. And she was uncomfortable breaking the rules. And so as I have been thinking about where I am today and my love for that show, I did finish it. I didn't binge it as enthusiastically towards the end as I did at the beginning.
Yeah, but sure.
Yeah, I think that really resonated with me. She was confident. She was okay with breaking rules and zigging and zagging. And she knew who she was and what she wanted. And she was resilient, wasn't she? She really could pick herself up as well. And I think that's a really important trait.
Oh, yeah. So tell us about this Matrix Award as a rule breaker.
Yeah. So the New York Women in Communication celebrates women who are doing things to advocate and support the next generation of women in communications. It was just announced yesterday, so I'm kind of reeling from the news. I've been a couple of times, and you know, many greats like Katie Couric, Maya Angelou, lots of really impressive people are celebrated every year. And my dear friend, Devika Bulshandani, who's now the CEO of Ogilvy and one of my closest friends, but also a great partner, won a few years ago and advocated for and nominated me. And when she called me, I was absolutely blown away. So I'm in good company with the other nominees this year.
You certainly are. Now, I've been to those awards. I mean, it's right up there for me with the Hall of Fame. That's about career achievements. It's very personal. People bring their families. The stories they tell are very, it's the Matrix Awards are just like that. So I was there a few years ago. One of my clients was awarded, and it's such an event of love and of achievement and of relationships. So congratulations.
Thank you. I'm truly humbled. Yeah. And Kristen Chenoweth is being honored this year, and as an ex-aspiring thespian, I'm just in absolute awe. And Nina Garcia from Elle. So it's a great group of women. I'm really simply delighted.
So who will join you for that event?
Well, H&R Block has been so supportive of this journey that I've been on and is a big platinum sponsor for the event. So I'm going to bring my crew from H&R Block. I'm going to have my family. My mother will fly up from Florida, which is really special. Since I last saw you, I suddenly lost my dad 2 years ago, and I hope he's going to be looking down. I know he'd be incredibly proud, but of course, my husband and my daughter, lots of friends and family. So we'll have a really lovely group, and some industry friends will certainly be there. Lots of our agency partners are showing the love and support and want to be a part of it. So I'm really excited. And it is just, as you said, a moment to really celebrate everything that gets us where we are, that support, the relationships that we're so fortunate to have. I'm humbled and in awe.
So how do you break the rules and have it stick? Because there are a lot of people who break stuff, but it doesn't stick. It's something, you know, when you break a rule and it leads to a step change in something on the positive front, I mean, that's the best. So what are your secrets for breaking the rules in the right way?
I think you can break some of the rules some of the times, and particularly in the categories that I've worked in, it's about placing some bets and making some choices and being vulnerable as you do that. We've taken some really big swings at H&R Block. Wow, it is such an interesting category. When we're breaking rules, we call it out. And I think it's really, really important. And one of the things that I've worked really hard to do is to ensure that those who are doing the hard work, who are ambitious, who are bold, curious, pushing the boundaries, understand that they have a safety net and that ultimately we're in this together, and kind of win, lose, or draw. Ultimately, it's on me and the leadership team, but that they're empowered and that it's safe. And then certainly you have to balance that with the tried and true, and then continue to infuse a sense of, you know, that it's like politics, repeat, repeat, repeat. When we do something, when we break the rules, and as you said, it sticks, it is about reminding those around you about how you got there and why it worked, to inspire more confidence to continue to swing for the fences and break another rule.
What's the biggest rule you've broken at H&R Block that has stuck?
One of the things that became an opportunity as I was understanding this category was just how complex the category is. When I joined, Jeff Jones, who is an amazing CEO and such a great supporter and previous marketer himself.
An ex-CMO.
Yes, exactly. Previously at Target, The Gap, Coca-Cola. And he shared, retail's got nothing on tax season. And I thought, gosh, I don't know about that. And boy, was he right. You have 105 days roughly to capture your fair share of a total addressable market of about 150 million Americans who pay taxes every year. And going back to the question, the rule that we broke was to think about the category differently. It is a category that has really been all about prevention to some extent, you know, prevent getting audited. We've been trying to outdo the competition with our functional approach to the category. And it really exudes this almost a sense of pressure. I mean, you think about the semiotics of taxes, right, Jim? Like, so you mentioned taxes, people don't feel a sense of release or optimism, even though the outcome for more than 75% of Americans is that they actually get a refund. So it's the process that's challenging, not the end result. And so we wanted to challenge the category. And as a nearly 70-year-old brand who in many ways is synonymous with taxes and the help and the expertise that we provide, we challenged the category and we wanted to make it more approachable and to take some of the pressure out of it and celebrate the outcome, do it in a way. I love Eat the Big Fish, challenge your brand mentality. Mm-hmm. And we really thought about how could we challenge the category in a way that was true to the H&R Block brand, which was to be real and human and to understand these hardworking Americans. And that is really our audience, these hardworking Americans and who they are. They are really Block, right? They live in the blocks. We work to make every block better. We've gone out to meet them. We can talk more about the things we're doing, but breaking rules like doing activations, local activations, making the category fun. We launched a first ever category tax got Max to represent that release and that little win when the ease and guarantees that we provide play out for a consumer who chooses H&R Block.
All right. Well, you also talked about your grandfather from Croatia and how influential he was for you. You talked about the trip you took back to Croatia with him when you were 18. He was very influential in your life. What lessons and learnings did he leave with you that are still part of who you are today, Jill?
One of the things that generation really celebrated was their dreams and the achievements and what they could pass on to the next generation. And we were fortunate to live close to my grandparents. I think we talked about Sunday meals around the table and references to said old country. I was always very curious about that. And I think the thing that inspired me from that was to continue to dream and to understand that I could achieve things, and that even despite really tremendous barriers, moving continents and leading your family an ocean across the world, that you can achieve great things. And the sacrifices that they made. My dad was the first in his generation to go to college, education, exposure to culture, and just that sense of curiosity and really not being afraid. I think it ties to that topic of breaking rules.
Yeah, right, right.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com.
Let's get back to H&R Block. We're recording this episode right in the heart of tax season, and you just talked about rule breaking and making tax season a bit more joyful and focus on the outcome. But I'd like to understand, as the CMO and Chief Experience Officer, in these 100 days or so that are the heart of tax season, how does your work change for you, or does it in this season?
It does. And we celebrate our tenure at H&R Block by the number of seasons that we've worked.
You know, like a sports team.
It's like, I'm in my third tax season. I'm in my fourth tax season. And then we've got some who've been here for 15, 20 seasons. So the work does change. And working in payments had seasonal moments and spikes that were really important. But you could recover from those. You know, this is, you've got one bite at the apple in those 100 days. And so at the same time, Jim, we're really working to not only be a seasonal business, we're working hard to do more jobs for more consumers and small businesses on a regular basis. And so we're also trying to build the muscle of not having this radical start stop where the season ends, you hit the deadline. We actually changed the end of our fiscal year to the end of June to kind of change that quarterly mentality and the season ending. And we're working hard to both create, build, and run in an always on basis. The role of understanding who we're serving, the role of the customer and how that shapes the experiences we build is much more of a focus when we're not in season. There's a lot of that creating, building, but it's hard to test, right? And I've never worked in a category where you can't test at scale. You know, you kind of hit the ground running on January 1st. So we do a lot of micro testing leading up to that. But in this moment, it is all about performance we're doing. And I love that. It's one of the things that has been so rewarding in the shifts that I've made in my career in working in direct to consumer businesses, which is, you know, winning the hearts, minds, and choice of the consumers that we serve. And we do daily stand-ups. We're looking at, you know, what does the demand landscape look like? Are we creating enough demand? Are we capturing enough demand? I will tell you, last year, the filing deadline was on April 18th. And I was a little lost after all the energy of optimizing and performing and meeting with our media partners and Google on a regular basis to understand where we could capture more demand. And then all of a sudden it was like, there's no more demand. It's over. And then you gear up for the next year.
This is the performer in you, right?
Yes.
This is the show business. The show is over and you have this, you know, the post-show depression.
That's so true.
So tell me, you're doing these daily stand-ups. Tell us about those. So it's 100 days. That's a lot of stand-ups. So who meets? What do you talk about? What kinds of things are you looking at?
Yeah, we have a cross-functional team. We're organized largely by center of excellence and then a go-to-market function that we've stood up in the last 2 years. That was changing things at H&R Block, actually organizing all of the people that were touching the experience through a pod-like structure, through go-to-market specialists, which serve as the primary point of contact into our lines of business, becoming more agile, really getting into that, what is working, what do we need to fix, what's urgent. It's also interesting because you don't get any real market share data until after the season is over. The IRS is starting to share a little bit of aggregate data now. So, you know, we're looking at, what do we know? What are the signals? What are the signs? What do we think is working well? We get a lot of data in the work that we do to focus on the two primary experiences we deliver. One, which plays out in retail, the 10 plus million consumers who choose to work with one of our tax pros, either in person or virtually, and then the 10 million who choose to do their taxes themselves using our online products. And so we've got a lot of data. You know, we're big into Medallia. You know, did we meet your expectations? Was it as easy as we said it would be? Are we bringing the expertise? So we're looking at the client data, the survey data. We then have to work with the field to say, you know, here's what's working, here's what's not. Continually looking daily at how are people searching for taxes? What does that mean in the way of how we think about our search strategy? Looking at our content, we've done some really, I'd love to talk about some of the big bold swings we took with content this year.
I've seen some of them.
So it's just really agile. You know, what's the data telling us? What do we need to do? And then real clarity on how we mobilize teams to get at closing the gap or accelerating what's working.
Last time we talked about how curious you are about consumer behavior. That's one of your superpowers, right? And we're going to talk about superpowers a little bit later in the show. But you've been there now about 2 years. You love studying consumers. What's an insight or an observation from these past 2 years about the end consumer that has been surprising to you?
I love observing consumers in the wild, as we've discussed. I'm headed to Atlanta later today, and I'll be visiting offices down there. And I had the opportunity to observe that moment of intimacy that exists between our client and the tax pro. When I was studying the category, what I learned was that it garners all this insecurity. We only do it once a year. Most consumers, you've got kind of two mentalities. Those who want to do their taxes themselves, and we've got an amazing digital product that's as good or better than the competition for sure. And they feel like no one's going to treat their refund or outcome as seriously as they will, or they can't afford professional help. And then you have others who choose to work with a professional because they feel that they need that expertise and care to get their maximum outcome. So the thing that has been most surprising is a little bit the duality of those mentalities. And for those who choose to work with a tax pro, what I observe is it's almost like the relationship that one has with a medical care provider, a doctor. It is so intimate. And the level of detail that you have to share about your financial circumstances is more than you share with anyone else. And you'll hear these really touching stories from our tax pros. We have 60,000 tax pros employed during season, which is unbelievable. 9,000 offices across the U.S. We're within 5 miles of every American. And our 60,000 tax pros, those who have been at it for a while, will say that they know when a couple comes in, if one of the spouses might be terminally ill, based on the way that the conversation changes and what they're trying to share and the comprehension that they're trying to drive with their partner during that process. And so that really was something that I had read a lot about, but to see it play out, that level of intimacy. And then on the flip side, the level of confidence that other Americans have in using digital tools and really empowering themselves as the expert. But it really comes down to you need an expert to get through this process, to feel confident that you have it's, you know, it's once a year. For most Americans, it's the most significant financial moment of their year. And so ensuring that they get every credit deduction. So they're choosing us for expertise, whether it's confidence in that 70 years of, you know, the corpus of knowledge that we've built into our digital product, or in really surrendering to the relationship they have with the human on the other side of the desk.
How do you train for that, Jill? I mean, you know, obviously when you go to a tax professional, you expect and you hope that they're totally up to date on the guidelines, the laws, the rules, and they help you, you know, file in the right way. But these other things you're talking about, the empathy, the reading the room, the getting at what's unspoken in the room. Do you look for that when you recruit? Do you help people develop those skills better? Talk a bit more about those 60,000 people and how they develop that read the room empathy kind of mentality.
Yeah, that empathy, that tax desk manner is so important. And so, yes, we definitely look to recruit for that. We reinforce it. It is a very hands-on business in season with the field organization spending time observing, reinforcing what's working well, looking at the dashboards and the way that we assess client satisfaction to see, are we hitting those expectations? Are we delivering the empathy and care that a client expects, and really interrogating that data? And those who, you know, I've learned so much about retail. That was the one thing, you know, I didn't have true retail experience. And so understanding the operations and what it takes to do what you've just asked about, which is to train a field organization at that magnitude to reinforce good behaviors. And we have some really excellent folks out in the field. You know, it's classic kind of regional managers, you know, district general managers, head of retail, and they've all grown either largely at H&R Block or through other retail experiences, and bring that passion for grooming associates who care about their clients, but it's certainly not always easy, Jim. So yeah, we've got tools, we've got curriculum, we recruit for it, we leverage data to reinforce what's working well, and yet most of the times we deliver, you know, we have to continue to challenge ourselves to understand what's not working and what more we can do. Lots of communications. I've got two dedicated field communications specialists. We do podcasts to provide, you know, micro content to educate. We've got a learning portal. It's all of the touch points to make it as easy as we can, particularly in season.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So what do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com. Now, you hinted at this already in the show, but things are changing at H&R Block, right? So you are, sort of reframing what the brand stands for. And your ambitions seem to be pretty big and larger than I think most people would have imagined a few years ago when they think about H&R Block. And Wall Street seems to like it. Your stock is doing very well. I think it's about double from when you joined 2 years ago. So could you take us through this journey, which I guess maybe began before you were even there, to sort of change the ambition, reframe the brand? There are a lot of our listeners who will have that experience in their career where they have to change the way a brand is seen and felt and thought about. So could you talk about when that journey began? What was the catalyst? What was the business reason to do it? And how do you talk about that ambition today versus what we may have talked about a few years ago?
It was well underway when I joined. One of the reasons I chose to take this experience at H&R Block was the transformation ambition that was defined by Jeff Jones and the leadership team. Jeff had been quite clear about H&R Block having a relevancy opportunity and, you know, transformation and change. You know, the work we did at National Geographic and other places is near and dear to my heart. With that as a backdrop, the question was, well, who is our audience and what do we need to do to understand them to be more relevant to them? In the way of products, experiences, claims, content, really sophisticated media where we meet them. And one of the things that has been so rewarding about this role is how empowered I feel across the team of customer experience leads, experience strategists, designers, marketers, comms experts to actually architect that journey and understand where we reach consumers. And so, you know, without going into lots of detail, I think let's talk about Gen Z, a digitally native generation who was not choosing H&R Block at the rate that we needed them to drive growth. And so really started with, okay, who are our consumers? As I said earlier, broadly, they're hardworking Americans who want that best outcome. So we started with a little bit of, you know, segmentation, and we looked at where were we doing well? And where did we need to do better? And Gen Z was one of those opportunities. And the other thing that's, Jeff Jones will say, my taxes are starting to show. So your taxes are showing. we really get into taxes, but it's an inertia category. And so oftentimes, once you choose a way to do your taxes, even if it's not serving you well and you're not satisfied, change is hard. Like lots of financial service choices that you have. And so we wanted to win with Gen Z as they were making that choice coming out of college to work with us. So it was about ensuring that our digital products were competitive, and we really had to drive more awareness. And so we've been really focusing on doing more in social, meeting that audience where they are. We had lots of FinTok influencer kind of content last year, which we saw really moved the needle. We leaned into our purpose with a platform that celebrated female athletes and what was going on with name, image, and likeness called A Fair Shot. And we started to move the needle on awareness, right? We had, you know, we have very high national awareness and trust, but with some of these cohorts that we want to win with, it was not there. And so we were really delighted last year to create some of this content and to start to move the needle with Gen Z. And, you know, based on that momentum, this year we took a really big, bold risk and we created a satirical micro series called Responsibility Island, which is a lightly scripted piece of, you know, satirical reality TV like content where we have four Gen Z stereotypes that, you know, on an island and they can't get off until they file their taxes themselves. And Jim, I have to tell you, TMZ referenced it the other day. Our head of retail operations was in a hotel room and he screenshotted it on his iPhone. And I said, you know, when I joined, two things that didn't go together was, you know, TMZ and H&R Block in a positive reference saying, it makes you want to do my taxes with H&R Block. So I think we're definitely breaking through and getting noticed and celebrating our consumer in ways that is new and fresh. And, you know, we've got to do that. We've got to put more momentum, more energy, more differentiation into the brand.
Yeah, there's a really important principle you've just elaborated, and that is if you're not healthy as a brand with people who are entering your category, the brand is doomed. I mean, we had a ritual at P&G of in every category, you measured your market share with people who were entering the category. And if that was high, the brand would probably have a few more decades of growth. But you had to be really, really focused on the entry level. That's what you've done.
Yes.
Right. And it seems to be working. I know it's still sort of early days. Could you talk to us about the principles behind that? If you were to counsel a brand to be relevant with young people entering their category, Gen Z or whatever that might be, what sorts of things have you learned that are working?
Understanding that consumer and where their attention is with Gen Z, as you well know, Jim, they do not want to be interrupted. They don't trust brands generally. They don't want their flow to be interrupted. So that was a big part of understanding the headwinds that we had in the traditional ways that we were doing marketing and actually breaking through with them. And so that are so critical to reaching an audience and capturing their attention, platform-specific content, the role of influencers. We embarked on a partnership this year with Vayner on our social, which has been really incredible, augmenting the great creative strategy and brand strategy that we do with Ogilvy. But, you know, the social piece has really allowed us to be very nimble and very agile. I think that's a principle, a tenet. You don't know what's going to hit, what's going to resonate. And we keep, you know, understanding the audience. We've had a lot of fun jumping into cultural moments and, you know, all of the energy around, gosh, I'm a new Chiefs fan as a Chicago native, but, you know, all of the energy around that, all of, you know, the Taylor Swift effect and, you know, really just understanding what is the kind of content that this audience will seek out versus trying to interrupt them. And that was the bet that we made on this fun micro series Responsibility Island, which is let's not disrupt them. Let's give them something that they can enjoy and serve as a destination. We've actually got it serving up on Roku. It's pretty interesting. It's doing really well on YouTube. So anyway, I think that's understanding how they're consuming, what are the barriers to getting their attention and how do you meet them, you know, traditional marketing, meet them where they are. But it's also, in many ways, it's more challenging, but in other ways, with embracing those agile principles, I think it's easier because you're not, you know, it's not as set and forget and wait to see how it performs. We're really, again, we've talked about agile and daily standups. We're optimizing daily.
I'm recording the show, by the way, in Vayner's headquarters here in Hudson Yards in New York. So they're all like glowing out there.
Creating. I love being there. They're like literally people are creating all around.
Yep. That was a great story you just told. That's a lot easier said than done. So what had to change in your organization, in your culture, how you set up your organization? So talk about pre-post in terms of H&R Block in your remit, chief marketing experience. What are the biggest changes you've had to make in how you approach things through your organization?
Really challenging ourselves. You know, we have this duality of our experiences. You want to work with a pro in the retail network or virtually, and this amazing online product. Within H&R Block, there was a sense of, you can do either or. You can do assisted and telling that story really well. If we start to talk too much about what we do in the online space, perhaps we cannibalize that. And what are the risks associated with cannibalizing one versus the other? When I joined last year, the mandate was to increase market share in our DIY product. The street was really asking us, you know, what were we finally going to do? You mentioned our results and momentum, but one of the things was, you know, retail is not really dying, but there's a perception of, well, as retail becomes a less prominent way to meet consumers, you have to be able to compete digitally. So there was a cognitive awareness that that had to happen. But then when we started to talk about what that meant to challenge the category, you know, we actually called out the competition last year and talked about the fact that we were easier and that it was easy to switch.
I saw that.
And to drive consideration that there was another way to do your taxes if you wanted to do it online. And so there was this cognitive awareness that we had to do that. But when we actually started to take off the gloves, and that was the brief from Jeff, was take off the gloves. Let's get at this. Then when we started to do that, I can tell you the waters got bumpy and I was new. And I think there was a little bit of, let's see how you're going to do this. Like, how are you going to navigate trying to talk about the fact that, you know, as we would say things generically, like we do all kinds of taxes, but that didn't really resonate with the consumer. We needed to borrow some of that brand equity and we needed to tell our story. And as we reported at last year's earnings, we grew market share in our online experience by 35 basis points, which is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's people knowing that we have to do things differently, but really driving, it's about the breaking rules thing again, driving that confidence, letting people know that we were going to be responsible. We weren't going to be reckless. We were going to take care of our core business as well. Not that one is core. Our core business is doing taxes, however the consumer wants to do it.
Yeah, yeah. When I was at P&G, we used to debate that all the time. How direct do we get about our competition? Do we name them? Do we show them? And P&G obviously built a lot of brands on side-by-side demos. When you made that decision to directly go after a competitor, what sorts of things did you debate? And how do you feel about the approach now that you look back on it?
Well, it was something that we had been trying to do. When I joined, I looked at, gosh, probably 8 seasons worth of campaigns and performance and data. We really also needed an agency partner that would be bold. And that's when, you know, enter Ogilvy, who we've really both had to learn the category and what was going on. And the risk reward, it was kind of like this side-by-side comparison. When you do a side-by-side comparison, you leapfrog a lot of awareness in storytelling and you drive that awareness of what it is that you're talking about. And again, given the intensity of the season and needing to get as big a bite at the apple every day of the season as we could, that was the strategic choice that we made, which is we had been trying to say, do your taxes online. Well, what does that mean? Like the world is online today. Everyone has a phone. If you want to make an appointment with one of our tax pros, you also do that largely online. So we'd had a lot of, we're online, use our digital products. Those are not consumer speaking terms when mm-hmm. they think about how they relate with products. And so the way to shortcut that was to take that risk and leverage the awareness that has been defined by one of the biggest competitors in the category.
Listen, we're going to go to the creative brief in a minute, but I have one last question. There's such creativity coming out of your company. I mean, the mobile banking app, the Block Advisors, your approach to Gen Z, your funny campaign that's on sort of linear television and other places. It seems like you're having a lot of fun. You're breaking some rules, but creativity seems to be alive and well at H&R Block. Tell us about that. What have you done to elicit such creativity from your team and the partners you work with?
When I joined H&R Block, I was so impressed by the talent, the associates that we have. It's so great to be in a hometown company after all the global brands I've worked with. And one of the things that I observed was how hungry the marketers and our experienced leads were to win. And so it was all there. They just needed a platform to connect with the business, to take risks. So it's really fun to see them thrive. You know, what we talked about last year, Jim, was let's be comfortable with being uncomfortable. That was the mantra when we came in. And we said, let's not rule anything off the table, challenging the category, calling out the competition, treating taxes in a way that was more lighthearted to make it more approachable. And all of that worked really well for us. And so, you know, this year we said, what is it going to take to get people to, you know, even on linear TV, how do you get people to care about a tax commercial without it feeling like boring and super functional? And enter Max, who's our tax guy. Max was secondary figure. We introduced him lightly last year, and he was a breakout success, largely with associates. Our associates loved the fact that we were doing something more creative and that we had this character that embodied the talent, that win. And so we started to do an exploratory, and our creative partners at Ogilvy have been really great. I think that was the thing that they brought to us, was how far on the spectrum of being comfortable with being uncomfortable did we want to go? And, you know, they really wanted to push the boundaries of Max. And he really represents that Every Person American, that moment of win, and that spot that we're doing where Max is in the grocery store, kind of as the backdrop for that win, when you get all of the guarantees when you file with H&R Block or a refund advance, which was a really important product. Like that, you know, so many Americans are really financially constrained at this moment. And we have a really relevant product, which is refund advance, getting access to your refund when e-file opens. But to do a commercial that talks about that functionally, you know, can be a little bit boring. And so enter a little banter and Max celebrating that win, that content is really, really resonating and doing all of the things that we hoped it would do. And it's been really fun to see. I will tell you, I was on set when we were shooting that in California, and there were moments where I was more uncomfortable than comfortable. And I thought, you know, we can't make fun of the category. We can't make it too lighthearted. You know, how do you have a tax cop that's throwing Cheetos into a grocery bin while also, or grocery cart, tax cop who's throwing Cheetos into a grocery cart, and also get the awareness that you need on the fact that we're there to do a really important financial job for you?
Well, you live the principle. Comfortable with being uncomfortable. I have a feeling we're in March Madness now as we're recording. I think we're going to see a lot of the tax Scott in March Madness. That's my hunch.
Well, watch this space. One of the things we've had a lot of fun with, Jim, is putting Max out where the people are. And, you know, we are a founder-led company. Henry and Richard Block founded H&R Block almost 70 years ago. They believed in our role in making every block better, which is still near and dear to our purpose and how we show up. And so we have been out in the community. We were in Louisiana for Mardi Gras, and, you know, Max was in parades and he was throwing beads, and it was great to hear young kids say, "Oh my gosh, that's the money guy." And so, yeah, Max is definitely helping to shape a different perception. And yet also the fact that he's there to get you more money and help you win. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned the other work we're doing. You know, it's great to our mobile banking app to provide those much needed financial solutions for our clients. We've got Spruce. We're able to marry, you know, that experience into taxes. If you have a Spruce account, you can get your refund 6 days early. So it's great to be thinking about how those consumers that we are seeking to understand need us and the different jobs we can do for them. So very excited about financial services and small business as well. And more to come on that, with more always on marketing for H&R Block.
Well, let's flip to the creative brief. And the first question, last time we talked, you said your superpower was connecting with people and your blind spot was moving too fast. So would you answer that question the same way 4 years later?
I would answer it similarly. My superpower is still definitely connecting with people. And as I mature, I find that even more rewarding. And that represents a bigger part of my purpose. And I think that probably presented itself through the experience of watching my daughter navigate her career and wanting to network, and experiencing people who were either incredibly generous and paying it forward with the next generation, and those who weren't. That has really become a bigger part of my purpose. When I have people who reach out to me who are looking to pick my brain to network, I'm really happy to do that. And I find that it fuels me because I enjoy it so much. And I feel like, you know, if I can invest my time, and you're so generous, you do that all the time, right? So, and I think, you know, for me, it's just because I enjoy it, it's rewarding, and I prioritize it. And so that's even probably a bigger part of how I would identify my superpowers and also my personal purpose, which I'm thinking more about in this chapter of my life. On the moving too fast, I still have to really caution myself not to move too fast. I have definitely slowed down in this role. I have worked really hard to empower the team around me. I mentioned this wild piece of content we did, Responsibility Island, production company that had been courting me for years, Pyro and the team there who'd done branded content for Chipotle and Butterfinger. They approached me with this idea during the writer's strike. So there was also some really fortuitous timing. Some of the best writers in Hollywood who couldn't do their craft could do it for brands and wanted to meet with brands who would be open to content ideas. The old version of me would have moved really fast. I would have gone into the workshop and I would have really driven that. In this environment, I took a pause. I shared the opportunity with my creative team. I have an amazing team of creatives, as we discussed. And I said, go have a listen and let me know what you think. And so that has evolved to being intentional about bringing others along.
How do you talk about your personal purpose now?
It is very much to leverage celebrating how much I love to connect with people to help the next generation and those around me realize their potential. And I think that's what makes the Matrix Award that we discussed earlier such a rewarding recognition. And so it really is about connecting with intention and bringing that growth mindset that I so embodies who I am, not just to how I deliver performance, but how I help others grow. It's about, you know, carving out time to do that. Yeah. So it's about connecting with intention to drive human growth.
You talked last time about executive coaches being so helpful for you. What has been the lasting impact on you as a leader from your friendship and your counsel from coaches?
It's a great question because while at H&R Block, I brought along my previous coach with whom I have a shorthand and who knows me, and then leveraged the executive coaching network that we had with H&R Block. And you know, there was a bit of a saying, like, how many coaches does she need? You know? And I just find it also fascinating to understand who we are and how we show up. And I think that pivot from moving fast to bringing others along is something that I have really worked on, which is to understand my role as a leader, as a connector, and that it is less about doing and more about impact and legacy, and understanding what does that mean for those around me, and how do I support and elevate them. And it's a really important part of these kind of roles.
You said last time that the first brand that made an impact on you was Quaker Oats. Do you still hold to that answer?
I do. As I shared, my dad worked at Quaker Oats. And I think about it even more than I did when you were the first person to ask me that question. Part of what inspired me with Quaker Oats was the thing that you referenced that you do at P&G, the launching of new products. My dad worked there. We always had new products that we were testing, that we were sampling, that he was talking about the role of characters in driving differentiation, intimacy with customers, and the importance of what the brands that were part of Quaker Oats did in understanding their consumer. I shared with you last time we spoke, I love walking the aisles of grocery stores and love seeing how products are displayed and how consumers are interacting with them. So yes, Quaker Oats is still near and dear to my heart, along with many other brands that inspire me today.
Jill, this has been a terrific conversation, and the way you ended that, but it's almost like all this experience is built up to make the perfect chief experience and marketing officer for H&R Block. So it's a beautiful story of gaining the most from every experience and bringing that into the next experience, which is why I think you're having such a great run at H&R Block. So congratulations on what you're doing to help people, which is your mission in a very, very emotional time in their life, right? And congratulations on the Matrix Award. I mean, and enjoy every minute of preparation and enjoy your family and your friends. So I'm just delighted you're getting that award. You're so, so deserving. And it's been so great to connect with you officially on the podcast 4 years later.
Thanks so much, Jim.
That was my conversation with Jill Kress. Three lessons from this one for your business, brand, and life. The first one, breaking the rules. Jill is getting an award in late May at a very special industry event for breaking the rules. I asked her how she does that in a way that sticks, and she talked about bringing people along with you. She talked about communicating a lot. She talked about being repetitive. She talked about being in touch with customers and your employees. So a beautiful lesson on how to transform something, break the rules, but in a way that is strategic and that sticks. Second takeaway, how to build a brand with Gen Z. And this is a brand, a 70-year-old brand that is not exactly one of the, has not been one of the hippest brands among young people. This was a great case of how do you transform your organization, your approach, by listening to the consumer that you want to appeal to, that's Gen Z for H&R Block, and really adjusting everything so that you're relevant and meaningful to them, including the kind of partners that you bring in. And the third takeaway, we've talked about this off and on the podcast, the power of an executive coach inside or outside the company, and Jill's have been outside the company, to help you maximize your strengths and minimize your blind spots. Jill got very specific about her strength of connecting with people, how the coach has helped her take that to a new level, and how her coaches have helped her minimize her blind spot of moving too fast. That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production. Episodes of the CMO Podcast are produced by Gallery Media Group. The views and opinions expressed by podcast speakers and guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of our sponsors or its personnel, nor do our sponsors advocate or endorse any individuals or entities featured on the episodes.